The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country, as places tucked away.
I took a walk from where I lived, halfway up the portway on a new estate in Middle Drive, just up the throne. And just really, I suppose, it's some of them days you just like have a walk around the streets and bring back a few memories. And it triggered one. There would be a sort of story, I suppose, by the time I got there. But our Auntie Hilda used to live in Newbury Lane, which is why I knew the throne really, really well. We used to come across Lion Farm Estate from when we lived up on the Kirkmore, across the fields. And first thing we'd see, really, which is another story, was our Nana sat on the balcony of the first three-storey masonettes that was by the Phoenix. And I do a song about it, really, because our Nana lived in Portway Road for, well, really all her life, I suppose. And when my granddad Murray passed away, I was there on her own. And then the powers that be decided to knock Albury down and build a Mecca Bingo and a service centre and a McDonald's. And they moved everybody en masse onto Lion Farmer Estate, really, the big high-rise flats and some houses and some of these masonettes. And really, we used to pass our nanas, or go and see our nana at the flat. And I used to think it was lovely because I was sat on the balcony waiting for we. But actually, a war, because I hated the flat. Like her house had gone, the place that I'd lived all her life. And I really spent more time on the balcony, sometimes in a coat when it was cold, just looking out over the fields and I suppose reminiscing about the life that I had when her house was full on everybody and I'd cook for everybody and then I'd clean at the Traveller's Rest or I'd walk all the way to Arbourne and be in service with the big knobs, the doctors that was there. And her life was full and now her life was sort of empty in a way. Although everybody went to see her, you know, all of her daughters and her sons and grandkids all went to see her. It just wore the same. And a day lasts very long, really, in that masonette. It were more like a prison. So that was sort of part of a memory. As I was walking down the throne, I was thinking of that. And then there was a Raleigh rag where my Uncle Eric used to play with his band. My Uncle Eric and my dad and my Uncle Bill used to sing in the Murray Brothers. And they were really, really good. They used to sing all around Albury and all over the shop, really. And they got to the final of a thing called the Carol Leveson Show at the Brummagem Hippodrome, which really meant if you won that show, you'd got a chance of making it. But when they got there, they were told that the winner had already been selected and they sort of understood the mechanics of the industry in a way. And my dad and my Uncle Bill had got young Babs and my Uncle Eric hadn't at the time. And he was all for giving it a go, but they wanted to give up the security of the job. And they still played together now and again, but he sort of formed his own band and he used to play around places like the Rowley Rag, the Fullways, all of the pubs around him really were well known. And the rag ain't there anymore. And again, you sort of pass these places as they am now, but you see them as they am then. And by the time I got to bottom of the Throne Road, there's still two shops on the left-hand side, just as you get to the Whiteheath Crossroads. And that's where I first met my late wife, Sue. Which sounds a bit weird, really, but it's weird how it come about. Because, as I say, we used to go up to see my Auntie Hilda in Newbury Lane and Uncle Orme and everybody. And I remember this one day, like it were yesterday, really. We were coming over the Whiteheath lights, me and my father. And I looked across and there was a like an haberdashery shop, and I think there was hairdressers next to it, I don't know. They either the shops are there now, but they're somewhat different. And on the step in front of the shop, there were two babs. There was a little lad in his shorts and that, and then there was this wench in a white dress with a white ribbon in her hair. And they'd both got lollipops. And I took my dad's trousers and I said, can we have a lollipop from the shop, Dad? And he went, no, son, I got no money today. And I looked across and this wench smiled at me. And how many years later, 20-odd years later, after we'd been cooting a bit, we got talking about the old days, me and Susie, and sort of mentioned this instant, really. And I said, well, that was me. And it like sent you cold, because you think, well, was this fate? Was this fate that happened? And it was just unbelievable. And of course, then as we got talking, air feather, knowed my feather, air mother, knowed my mother. My dad asked air mother out when there were babs and stuff like that. So it was really strange, you know, walking down the throne and standing there really and revisiting that sort of memory. And then across the road, going up to Ashes Road, and you go under the motorway bridge, which wore there when we was kids. It was just, you went straight across the fields onto Tifford Lake, where we used to go off the side and go and swim to the island in the middle, or you'd sat there fishing or stuff like that. But halfway up Ashes Road, on the right-hand side, if you're going up, there was a little driveway, and that was the Conservative Club. And it was ever so weird, because at the time, like all my family were Labour folk, but the Labour Club, which was in Pound Road, were very good, really. It was in an old building. But they'd sooner go to the Conservative Club. Bit hypocritical, wore it, really. And they'd either leave we to be babysat by our Bob, or they'd take we down and we'd get a bag of Smith's crisps, then blue ones with the salt in the blue packet, and a glass of dandelion and burdock. And we'd go in the little room with the blokes played snooker, and they'd be in the big room and having a dance and stuff like that. And I used to go there religiously on a Saturday night. All my aunties, all my uncles, some of my older cousins. And it was just like summit that you did. And as you passed there on the right-hand side, there was another piece of waste ground where we used to come down and play for hours on that. And you got to Causeway Green Road. And the reason I'm telling you is, when you turn left, you'd go towards Then and Chickens, and there's a line of shops, and there still is a line of shops now. But there were a chippy there, which is still a chippy, but it's a different bloke. And I remember distinctly being in that chippy the night where John F. Kennedy were killed, and it was raining outside, and we'd gone down for some chips, and the radio was playing really low. And then you sort of half heard this announcement on the radio, and the bloke must have heard it, the bloke that was owned the chip shop, and he turned it up, and of course it said John F. Kennedy was killed. And it was such a surreal moment, because the rain was there. Everything seemed quiet. You know how things are quiet when it's raining? Everything seemed quiet, and we just stood there for a bit, just listening to the news. And then next to him was Ollick's. Robert Ollick was our mate, but he got polio when he was little, and he had these big calipers, and everybody would take the mick out of him. But we'd go and fetch him, and we'd put him on a bike, and we'd push him up to the hostel, and so we could play with we. But he had these calipers on for quite a long time. But when eventually he had it up, he used to come swimming with me, and he ended up being an absolutely busting swimmer. Then I think there were hairdressers. But the place I'm telling about is the electrical shop. It was the end of the row of houses, row of shops. And there, our dad used to go in on a Saturday, and he'd pay on the slate, because we rented a telly from the face before he had one off New Day. And all around the wall, there were these boxes, and they'd got the old LPs in, and then there were boxes of singles, and we used to look at them because we had a radio, so you could hear the music and stuff on the radio. But we used to look at these singles and we'd say, "Oh, Dad, look, here's the Nashville Teens, Tobacco Road. Oh, Dad, blah, blah." And you say, "Well, I don't know what I'm looking at them for, because we ain't got, got a record player or anything." And we, "Oh, can we have a record player, Dad? Can we have a record? Please, can we have?" And he'd go, "Son, I ain't got any money to buy a record player." And we'd go on at him every week when we went in. We'd go on at him about the, you know, about these singles and this record player. Any road up, the reason I'm telling you is, coming Christmas, our dad, it was really weird because our father used to, on the slate and all, he used to pay, I don't know, a shilling a week at Barclays at the bottom of Grafton Road. So he'd sort of be in front. So when he started to buy the stuff, some of it was already paid for, and we knowed, well, I knowed when Christmas were a-coming, because when he were on the Jedmon shift, was the 2 till 10 at Ackles's, he'd come up with a brown paper bag under his arm, and I'd sort of be, we used to sleep four in the bed, two at the top, two at the bottom, and I used to be the one nearest the stairs, and I'd always hear him come in and drop the latch. And I'd wait for him to have his supper. And then he'd come upstairs and he'd have this brown paper bag under his arm. And he'd go in his room and then he'd come back down. I'd pretend I were asleep. Well, when our Bob used to babysat and they'd go out on a Saturday night, I'd make me excuses that I were tired. I'd go upstairs and I'd go in me mum and me dad's bedroom. And they had like a little toolboy. If you don't know what a toolboy is, it's like a wardrobe. And my mother's was the little un, and my father's was the big un. And on the big un, there was like shelves at the top. And he used to hide what he'd brunged on the shelves at the top. Well, hide, I mean, you could hide anything on a shelf. So I used to get the little stool from the side on the bed. And once, they used to smoke in bed, my mother and father, and they had these little enamel ashtrays. And they'd leave the nub ends on there. And once I smoked a nub end while I was up there and I was sick as a dog. And our Bob told me father when he come home one Saturday night. And he just took me upstairs and he lit a fake. I think it was a senior service or something. And then there was fakes, you know, no nub ends or anything like that. And he made me have a drag at it. And I was, I was as sick as a dog and I never smoked anything in my life. I've never touched a cigarette in my life or anything like that. Any road up, I'd get the stool and I'd get up and I'd sit there. And most of them were like annuals and stuff. So I knowed everything that was going in the annual for Christmas. And I knowed about the compendium of games that you'd get. I knowed about the bag of nuts, the oranges, something like that. So I knowed everything. I used to tell you, our little one. Our Gary, he was like the middle one, really. And we'd be lying in bed and I'd say, "Go and get me so-and-so." And he'd say, "Oh, cool, I'm tired, I want to go to sleep." And I'd say, "Go and get me so-and-so." And he'd say, "No, I ain't going to get it." I said, "If you don't go and get me so-and-so, I'll tell you what you're going to get for Christmas. Because I know, I'd see." And he'd go, "How do you know?" And I go, "I just know. And I'm going to tell Dad that you said bugger." And he said, "Well, I don't swear." And I said, "Well, that don't matter, because he'll tell you off and he'll take your football boots off you and you won't be able to play." And I said, I was terrible, really, when I was little. Any road up, so I knowed all about Christmas. So there was this big, big, massive build-up always to Christmas. And you know, you still got excited about it. And this one Christmas, it was, I'd be about six, I suppose, six, seven. So our big un would be eight and the little un would be about five. And our Paul would just be a bab. He'd only be a bab. And Christmas Eve, you'd be there, you know, and the family had come round and the wenches would either have a baby sham or a port and lemon or a snowball. And there'd always be something to eat, pork pies, pickled onions, stuff like that. Or you'd be at somebody else's house and you'd come back. And then my father would say, "All right, then, you lads, get off to bed," and stuff like that. And you'd get off to bed, you wouldn't really go to sleep. And eventually you'd have to wait till you dropped off. And then, of course, they'd start bringing all the stuff downstairs that they'd got. and put it in pillowcases. You don't have like socks like you bought. You don't buy anything because you couldn't afford something to put them in. But they'd have pillowcases that my mother had probably embroidered a Santa on or something. And then they'd have another one for the end of your bed that just had one present in. And then, you know, then they'd be off to bed and they'd kip and all that. And you'd be up early on Christmas morning, downstairs, started opening the present. Oh, the Beano. Oh, the Dandy. Oh, we got a compendium in here. And you all had something, you know, and you'd have to share the compendium. You'd have to share the selection box. And it don't matter because, you know, you don't have no money. So it was just the way it were. You probably had pants and socks and you got just as excited about a pair of white fronts as you did anything else. But you don't have anything as such, really. And my dad tried to get you a present on your own that you don't have to share. And I think my eldest brother, he used to love to make stuff. So he liked to add a Meccano set or toy train or something. And I always had something to do with football. So I might have a new case ball. I might have some laces for my boots. I wouldn't have new boots. But I did have a pair of Stanley Matthews boots once out of Grattan's catalogue because I see them and they'd got orange toe caps and yellow laces. And I drove my dad mad for them. And again, he said, we ain't got any money and stuff like that. But I did have them and it was fantastic. They were absolutely fantastic because they had his name written along the side. And normally you had to have them boots where you had to put in them leather studs and you had to bang them in and the nails come through. And they had like a solid toe cap so you could lump the case ball because they were all like the case balls now. Once they got sodden, they weighed a blooming ton. So you had summit for your sin, really. Only one little present, but you ended up sharing it. I mean, I ended up playing Meccano with our kid. He ended up, you know, kicking a new case ball with me out on the patch. And you'd always go out on the patch and see your mates and see what they had. And they were the same, really. They had nothing special, but everything was special, if you know what I mean. And once you had read your annuals, if they'd got an annual that you hadn't got, that you'd just swap them over. So you was constantly borrowing stuff out and borrowing stuff off them. It were great. But this was a Christmas that I can remember and probably the best Christmas ever. Because we'd been down there quite a couple of hours, really, and we'd opened all our stuff and then you have a bacon sandwich and then them starting to get the dinner on and the turkey had been in all night in the oven and my mother had taken the turkey out and put the mate in and stuff like that. And we'd been playing for a good hour or something and there were a knock on the door and it was our Freddie, our Auntie Glad's lad. Now, Freddie and John were older than we and they were both at work. And they lived in Oakdale Road and we lived in Oakdale Close. My other aunties lived in the other roads. And my dad went to the door and he went, "Hello, Fred, what you got?" And he said, "Well, Uncle Harry," he says, "I've got a box here that's wrapped up, but it's aye for we. We've had all our presents and I don't know what it is." Now, little did we know that, see, our Freddie had an Alba deck. It was like a record player, an Alba deck, like a mono deck. And for his records, for his singles and his records. But that Christmas, him and our John, and I think our Bob, I don't know if they'd started work or not, but they'd brung the mum and dad a stereogram. Now, if you don't know what a stereogram is, it's like a piece of furniture, and it's got the radio in it, and a record player in it. And it to go in the best room, if you know what I mean, because it was a lovely piece of furniture. And then you could either have the radio on or you could play records and stuff. So he'd brung them this. And what he'd done is, I don't know if I've ever paid for it, but certainly he had it. And he'd said to me, "Dad, well, your kids are driving your blooming saft about, you know, having a record player, so y'all can have this." Now, we might have given him 10 bob or a quid or something like that. I don't know. I don't rightly know, and I've never asked my father that. But then he rode up, he says, come in, come in. And he come in the front room, he says, hello, hello, Babs, you all right? Have you had a nice Christmas? Yes, Freddie, we've had this. I've had a Meccano set, I've had a case ball, blah, 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 blah. And he says, well, I've got, and there's something about our Fred was Jack the Lad. And some Saturdays he used to come from work and we'd be there. And he says, I brung you a bit of pocket money. And we'd say, oh, lovely. And he'd get out a 10-bob note. And if you don't know what a 10-bob note is, it's like it was half a quid, like a 50p. And it was brown. And he'd rip it into four, because of four on we. And he'd give us like a quarter each. And we'd go, Freddie, we call that. It's a quarter of a 10-bob note. And then he'd just chuck it on the... My dad would go, man. He'd just chuck it on the fire and burn it. And then give me another one, or give me dad another one, and say, split it between these four half a crowns. And he'd say, Fred, you're blooming mad, you are. That's the type of bloke he was. Anyway, he comes in, and he says, I've got this parcel, Babs. And it's come to our house. And he'd tell you, wasn't. I don't know where it is. It's just got the lads on it. And they went, and we went, well, I don't know. What could it be? I don't know. He says, I don't know. And he shoved it down in the middle on me. And my dad says, well, you might as well open it, hadn't you? So we opened it up. And there was this green Alba record player. Well, we did twig it was our Freddy's. We just thought. And we went, we got a record player. We got a record. Look at this, Dad. We got a red Santa's brung. We a record. And we went mad. And then, of course, we all went quiet. And we went, well, what's the point of having a record player? We barely got any records. Oh, me dad says, that's a bit of a problem, ain't? And he scratched his head, and our Freddy scratched the head, and he said, well, I don't think Santa would have brung thee a record player without any records. We better go and see if we can fund anything. Well, under the stairs in them houses, them days, were a gas cupboard. Where you had your gas meter and your electric meter and everything like that. And often stuff would be put in there. So we said, come on then, we'll go and have a look. And we looked in the tall boy, it wore there where you'd think it would be. Looked in the little tall boy. Looked in the airing cupboard upstairs, it wore there. And then he said, well, Donnie, the other place than the cupboards in the kitchen and on the cold stone in the pantry where it wore, we even went in the outhouse and the cold place. The outhouse was like, I suppose, like the old brewers, but it wore the brewers because it was just linked to the coal place and there was nothing in there. And we said, well, this is daft because we call use it. And we started to get a bit mizzled and a bit mardy. And he said, well, there's only the gas cupboard under the stairs. Anyway, we went in the gas cupboard and there was like boots in there and odds and sods in there. And at the back, there was like this packet. This little box that was all... And I says, there's a box at the back, there's a box at the back. And he says, well, get it out then. See what it is. And we got this box out. Square, like a shoe box. It was a shoe box. And I says, it's a shoe box. It's a pair of shoes. What's that? And he says, well, it might not be shoes. Anyway, we took it in front room because it had just got the lads on. We took it in front room and put it by the record player, the Alba record player. Lime green it was. And... took all the paper off and I said, look, Dad, it's just a shoebox. And he says, well, open it up, see what's inside. Anyway, we opened it up and there was 10 singles in there. Now, singles was 45s, not LPs, not the big ones, 45s, the little ones. And they were 10 of the singles that we'd made reference to when we went in the shop when he played on Tick for the telly. Like if we said... Oh, Dad, look, it's the Nashville Teens, Tobacco Road. Oh, look, it's the Swinging Blue Jeans. Oh, Dad, it's the Animals. Oh, Dad, it's the Beatles. So there were 10 singles in there. And we went, oh, Dad, it's the singles that we've said we wanted from the shop. Oh, I know, he says. So he'd been buying them and sneaking them. Or he must have gone in at another time, not the time that he paid, you know, on the slate. And bringing them home. And he'd him and I never fund them. So he did put them in the tour, boy. They must have been in the gas cupboard all the while. And so we said, we plugged it in. And we put them on. Now, there was like a centre spindle with like this handle. And you could get 10 singles on this spindle, one on top of t'other. And then when you switched it on, the one dropped onto the deck at the bottom, and then the arm with the needle on had swung round and clip on the... You had to... There was two things. There was 33, which was the LPs, and 45, which was the singles. So we had to put this clip on 45, and it had swung further than an LP to drop on this single, and you had to hear... at the beginning, because there was a little bit at the front of the edge of the single that wore nothing on. And then all of a sudden, it had, you know, it had start the record. Doom-da-doom-doom. I was born in a barn. Da-da-da-da. My daddy got drunk. And then when it finished, you'd hear... And then it had lift up, swung back, go back onto the handle, and the next one had dropped down. And then it'd do exactly the same until you played all on the 10. LPs, I think you could only play one. But singles, you could play 10. So we was there Christmas morning playing these 10 singles over and over and out. Obviously, we got more after. But over and over and over again. And then we swap them over and you played the B-side because it was the A-side, which was the one that I tried to get in the charts, and the B-side that they recorded, which was another song that they put onto the side. Sometimes you had a double A, where they were both like A-sides. Even though it was a B-side, they were both A-sides, and they wanted to get both of them singles in the charts. And I remember there was the Nashville Teens, there was the Beatles, I think there was Matt Monro, because my dad liked Matt Monro. There was the Swinging Blue Jeans, the Mersey Beats, the Ollies. I can't remember them all, but them were some of them. And we played them and played them and played them. And by about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, because the family had all come over for a drink, wouldn't they? They'd come over and say hello and have a sherry or something while have a chat. And then my nanas had come and my granddads had come and all that sort of stuff. And by 12 o'clock, I could hear my mother saying, "Tell them bloody lads to turn that down. I'm sick to death of hearing that music." But we were sick to death. It was absolutely brilliant. And we weighed that record player out and we weighed them singles out, I tell you. And then probably once a month, really, because we don't have much money. Once a month, we might save a bit of pocket money from when our granddad used to cut with hairs and he'd give us half a crown between us. And I can't remember how much the singles were then, probably a shilling or something like that. But we used to save it, and then once a month we'd bring a new single. And then I think my dad brought a Matt Monro LP, which was the first LP that we had, because he loved Matt Monro. And he had a voice like Matt Monro. And when we had the LP, we just sat there and just listened to it, because you had like 7 or 8 tracks on either side. It wore like a single where you had one track. And we just sat round this record player for hours just listening to it. And it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And that was probably the best Christmas that I absolutely ever had and we ever had, and the best present that we ever had. But mate, weird how you go out your front door for a walk and it triggers so many memories. You're out in the streets and you see everything as they were, and then all of a sudden this vivid memory of you being in the best room on Christmas morning comes back, and this whole story weaves itself into your head and just happens. Just fantastic, eh? So that's the Green Alba record player.
The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.